greet each one in Jesus' name again this evening. Thank you, Wilson, for what you shared. It couldn't have been a better devotional to lead into what we want to think about tonight. I was focusing more on the practical side of relationships, and it all starts with a relationship with God to make that practical side work. Real relationships in a media-driven culture. I invite you to turn to Acts 15. There's a verse there that has followed me and intrigued me for much of my life. It's a beautiful passage to me. It's in an era of time before we had the media-driven culture that we have today. I don't know how everything traveled in this era of time, but we know there was some brethren that wanted real relationship. Let's read Acts 15 and verse 36. It says, "And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do." There's something about that simple verse there and the desire of those two men that has followed me. It says it was after some days. It seems like it was not a whole lot of time elapsed till they said, you know what, we got to go again. We got to see how they're doing. We got to go check up. Go again and visit, they said. Not go again and play golf with them. Not go again and sightsee with them. Go again and visit. I believe they meant to sit down and talk and see how it's going. Look each other in the eye. Ask questions. Answer questions. Visit every city. They didn't say, let's go to some of the brethren. Let's be a little selective. Let's do a convenient route for us. And there's some we're going to miss, but that's okay. No, they said, let's go to every city. No stones left unturned in developing relationships that they had started. They were ready to invest energy in people. See how they do. Let's see how they do. The trip was about face-to-face conversation, to see, to lay eyes on, to sit down with, to show interest in others, in their well-being. I believe it was a genuine interest in others' lives to help them on in their experience, whatever they were facing at that time. I feel there's so much packed into that one verse about the foundations of real relationships. The media has turned upside down their hyped up version of alternatives to real relationships. And I do wonder, what all are we thinking about when you asked about media-driven culture? What when you stated that, what were you thinking about? You know, media in the broadest sense is simply a mass means of communication, of broadcasting, of publishing. But it does have subcategories. We have this thing called the news media. What is that? Well, it's an organization that pays a few people to gather information, and it finds ways to get that information to a very broad audience, and it makes them money. Isn't it neat? Instead of costing you to have a relationship and go back to the city and visit it yourself, you can be spoon-fed. You can send somebody else, and they can just report back how everything's going, and it didn't cost you that much. These people are not necessarily reaching out in the interests of the people that they are interviewing or that they are seeing, as much as they are looking for ways to attract an audience back home and share their gathered information with. This is why they will go to hostile countries and risk being in prison, or they'll go to war zones and try and capture the heartache and put it into pictures and words, and they'll go into inclement weather and maybe almost make it look worse than it is, so that the people that are watching think this is really bad where they are. That's part of media. It's called the news media. Another subcategory would be social media. This media is focused on the social aspects of life, talking about the same things we would maybe if we were face to face and in person around the supper table, but now we're connected with people that aren't in the room. We're connected with people on the other side of the world. As the people around us sit numb and glued in conversations that are not associated with us. If we don't have our phones at the table, typically, probably mealtime will be a good bit shorter. 100 years ago, I read that the average meal lasted 90 minutes because mealtime was conversation time. It was a time families caught up with what was happening. Today, the average mealtime is maybe at best 12 minutes. And probably for a lot of people, if they were not allowed to have their phone, 30 minutes would feel like an awful long mealtime. Media-driven culture. Because there's this FOMO, there's this fear of missing out. We just got to constantly stay in touch with people other than the ones we're sitting beside. We got to reach outside the walls in connection with others. Now, reaching outside the walls in connection with others is not something new. I grew up with a phone in our house from as little as I can remember. There was a black rotary phone on the wall in my mother's house. It had a cord, curly cord, about maybe you could stretch it 5 feet or so. But you could talk to one person at a time. Now, we did, interestingly enough, we had a party line, and I can remember that, where, you know, you were maybe talking to someone, you hear this click, 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 and I'd hear my mother say, "Oh, it sounds like someone wants on." And she would try and get the conversation wound down rather quickly. That was the signal, because this was one line shared with several people, several neighbors. But you know that it was a very limited way of communication, in that it didn't follow you all around the house. You had to stay within that 4 or 5 foot range, and it limited how long you talked if you had things you wanted to get done. And then I remember when a relative of mine, they said they got a private line, and she got a cord that was really long, and she could walk the whole way around her kitchen as she was on this wonderful device that connected her outside her house, and she could keep working, and there was no one that she didn't hear any click, click, clicks, that it was time to get off now. Technology. I'm probably sounding very old that I can even remember that to you young people. Social media has now taken what used to happen one-on-one and between two people. It has now taken it to a very large audience, and almost no restrictions in connectivity, no restrictions in how attached it is to our body. It can go with us everywhere we go. The phone travels with us. And with one push of a button, we can be talking to hundreds and thousands of people because of social media. And that is why a person like Taylor Swift could, with one post, endorse a presidential candidate and have 330,000 people sign up to endorse the same person within 24 hours. It's the power of media, the power of connectivity. It's the result of media influence. One voice, one post reaches many and influences many. Well, another subcategory of media is advertising. You know, part of the reason that we are so absorbed with our media is it is a tool. There are things being bought and sold. Older people can almost not wrap their mind around that you could just take a picture of your car and post it and have somebody calling you within an hour or two wondering about your car and have a serious interest in it. Here again, not real long ago, if I wanted to advertise a truck or something from the company, I had to think which newspaper I want to put it in. I had to think basically almost a week on ahead, get the ad in, and then it'll come out this Saturday or whichever day they print. And you had to do a lot more things. Now it's just so convenient. It's the pressure is on, and we want to watch it because we are buying things and we are selling things, and we want to have this there, and we can put in all these search words, and things pop up when what we're looking for, it pops up, and here again, we don't want to miss out. So we drag this media with us into what should be real life conversations. And another subcategory, maybe mostly for young people, is gaming and the sports media. One person is out there somewhere playing from an armchair, or maybe better, a gaming chair or a console. And because of their professionalism, they have an audience, a very broad audience, hundreds and maybe thousands of people that are doing nothing but sitting and watching them play. And they might be in a room with other friends, but they're all glued to this one person that's playing, that is so good at it. It's these things that have shaped our media-driven culture. And I think your sermon title is very honest tonight. It is a media-driven culture that we live in. It is. The title implies that the media culture will not go away, and we have to figure out a way to navigate it, to try and have real-life conversations in the midst of media that is around us, is part of us. And if we do nothing, real conversations will fast become a lost art. I'm pretty convinced of that tonight. How can you have good one-on-one relationships when there is this media pressure? How can you do it? How can you have a boring conversation with one friend in the room when there are five other friends that are vibrating in your pocket that are wanting to talk about things that you're excited about, actually? So what does developing real relationships look like? If we are going to push back on this media pressure, your title implies the media relationships have a limited benefit or are maybe superficial or unreal in some aspects and can compete with our real relationships that we really, really want. So if that is the case, what makes these superficial relationships so addictive? Why is it that we can be, I'll use the word, so stupid to sit around with five friends and all be looking at our phones when we got together to socialize? How did we ever get there that we can do that? And tonight, I'll be honest, my wife has to nudge me sometimes and get me away from my media because it's such a part of life. We were at an ice cream shop waiting in line to order some ice cream not real long ago. It's just this past summer. And the line went back alongside of where people were already seated and eating. And as I was standing there just observing all the lucky ones already ahead of me who got their ice cream and they're enjoying each other and socializing and eating their ice cream, I saw lots of friends smiling and chatting. I saw a lot of happy looks, but my eyes kept going back to one table. What appeared to be a tired-looking single mom with three children, the oldest maybe about 10 or 11, and the youngest maybe 4. And there they sat in zero, absolutely zero real-life conversation, all with bent-down heads, all over phones or tablets, all absorbed in some appropriate age media for their age, each one in their own world. Judging by their appearance, this was maybe very likely a costly night out for them. And here they were, sitting in a table at a place that was meant for relationships, staring at their devices. I believe I could have walked up to that table and said, boo, and I would have got a jump out of most of them. They were in another world. My son-in-law was standing behind me, and he noticed what I was noticing. He said, that's a sad picture right there. And I nodded my head. That's a sad picture right there. Is that sad picture happening? Is that sad picture creeping into our homes, into our life? If it is, we better do something about it. We better do something about it. It's not going to yield the fruit that we want in our real relationships. That mother apparently babysat her children with media. Apparently that's what she did. And she took it right with her to a place that was supposed to be for relationships. In how many of our homes is that happening? How many friends groups is that happening? Mealtimes have moved from a joyous, interactive occasion to an extension of our own little worlds. How many excursions meant to be relationship building, like campfires and cabins, at least 50% of the time is spent glued to media. And we say, oh, we're going to the cabin, or we're going out to eat. What's happening? What's happening when we get there? I'd like to think just a little bit about why has media become such a competition to real relationships? And is there anything we can learn from the media relationships? If media and real life conversations are competing, apparently there is some overlap in what makes them work and makes them tick and makes them desirable. There are some things that, yeah, I would rather communicate over my phone. It's almost more convenient. Well, number one, I'd like to list some foundations here for real relationships. And the first foundation of relationship is a common interest. A common interest. And now, I do want to say, for the lack of time, I did not go, but finally our foundation is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that creates a common interest. But what media has done, media weeds out the boring stuff and spoon feeds our interests without a lot of energy on our part. Now, I grew up on an economy tractor. How many of you here tonight know anything about economy tractors? I see one hand. So if I want to have a relationship here at Leola, what am I going to do? There's only one of you who knows anything about something I grew up with. You know what I can do? I can go on my phone and I can sign up to an economy tractor group. And I can probably entertain myself for a long time and I can just forget about all of you. I found a group of people that has my interests. And it's going to take a lot of energy to talk to the rest of you. Cliff and I could talk, but the rest of you, what are we going to say? I don't know. You don't understand me, and I don't understand you, so why work at it? Looks to me, if I was going to find a lot of camaraderie, I would be a bit limited here at Leola, at least as it relates to economy tractors. So if I want real relationship with you, what must happen? Must I get out my phone and show you a bunch of economy stuff and talk a tin ear on you so that you understand how good of a tractor they were and what you missed out on in life and what all you could do to modify them and how you could fix a clutch when they went out because they were such powerful tractors or clutches weren't big enough? You would likely, your eyes would probably be glazing over before long, and I would feel like real relationships don't work. They fall asleep on me when I try and talk. It's a whole lot easier to get out my media and let you sleep than it is to go to the energy of figuring something else out to talk about and try and find this common interest. You know, media, we have that instant, we can fine-tune our interests, we can just gather with people that gather, I use that word, tongue-in-cheek, but we can have this group that we share interests with, and it takes the work out of conversation. And it's interesting to us because it is our interest. And we can respond to that, and we can get oohs and ahs, and we can get thumbs up and smiley faces, and maybe to get the same thing in a real relationship is a lot harder. Real relationships need a common interest. Birds of a feather flock together. My second foundation is we need a foundation of unselfishness. These brethren that I read about, when they said, let's go again and see how they do, they weren't talking about a half-hour drive in air conditioning. We have to be unselfish people and get out of our box and let it cost us if we're going to build real relationships. Maybe the house will not be as clean as we were wishing for it to be by the end of the day. Maybe there is a project that will not have gotten done this week because we really need to spend time with this brother. He maybe knows some things that he's struggling with, and we know that he needs friends, and there's some things that have to suffer if we're going to have real relationships. We have a common ground in Christian community. Our faith is a great bonding agent. Our relationship with Christ, as we heard in devotions, is a foundational ingredient to make any relationship work. And when the Word of God and obedience is our common interest as a brotherhood, and we are seeking out each other to see how we do, real relationships can flourish. They can flourish. The brethren in the book of Acts, I'm sure, had a preference on what kind of ship they preferred sailing on, if they go again to sea, or maybe they had their tent-making work that they could talk about. But selfishness and personal interests were not the driving force of their relationship. Those were some of the sideline things. But they had an interest in the hearts of other people, helping other people make it to glory, helping other people into Christ. It was a search for the other's well-being. The problem in our society is the things of this world have become so big in our eyes, and it seems like eternal things may be so small, and the convenience of media relationships so easy that we are trading real life for superficial relationships and hardly even thinking about it. The average person touches their phones a lot more than their spouse. The average person looks at their phone a lot more than their spouse, listens to their phone a lot more than their spouse, talks to their phone a lot more than their spouse. This phone has become a fox that gnaws away at the vine of relationship. When we travel, we can be on the phone. When we're at the table, we can be on the phone. When we're in bed, we can be on the phone. The first thing in the morning, we can check our phone. And maybe we do it before even saying good morning to anyone if we waited to check our phone until we got out of bed. Technology is deadly to a relationship if not properly managed, because real relationships are not going to tailor to our personal interests like social media. Real relationships take effort. My wife wants to talk about something family related and maybe more of a feminine bent. Economy tractors don't interest her. So it takes a little more effort to listen and to be engaged and to ask questions and to show that I'm with her. And we are not all hardwired conversationalists. Some of us are maybe so calculated and proper, we can't hardly be spontaneous as we would like. It can be harder work than media relationships to have dialogue because of our personality. And that can factor in here. My wife and I went to visit a family recently. We called them before coming to make sure it was okay. Until we got there, they had someone else drop in, and they told us we have other company here now, and seemed like they were almost apologetic because they had told us we may come. And I figured it's no big deal. We'll make out just fine. New people don't scare me. But I found out it was pretty hard to have a one-way conversation. When all the other party does is answer your question with a few short words, it takes a lot of questions. When there's no exchange, when there's no feedback, when there's no interest shown in your life, and they don't return the favor of the question, it's a long evening. I found out it's a long evening. I was glad to listen to the ladies talk even. I needed help. Real relationships are reciprocal. Real relationships are back and forth. Real relationships probe and inquire and try and collectively think up ways to make this evening valuable and interesting. When that visitor told me where he works and a few other basic things, I wasn't sure where to go. I left there thinking about that individual's wife. I wonder what conversation is like in their home. Now, maybe he turns into a different person when it's just the two of them. I don't know. But I will have to give credit where credit is due. There's one thing he did not do. One thing he did not do, he did not sit there tapping around on his phone with his head bowed, and I wondered who in the world he is talking to instead of me. He didn't do that. The rudeness of social media is creating very ill-prepared people for real-life friendships. I watched a group of youth in a circle after church recently where a visitor stepped up. And to my amazement, there were a group of maybe four or so young men standing there talking that knew each other. And the visitor stepped up and he just stood off to the side a little bit. I think he was expecting somebody to reach out their hand and shake it and say hi, the things that real relationships are about. And not one did. He inched a little closer. After a while, there was a hi, and but there was this no exchange beyond that, just no exchange. And after a while, he started backing away from the circle because it seemed like he didn't feel like he was really, apparently not really invited. And then he stood around for a while, and then he stepped up again and decided he'd try again because obviously that was his age group that was in the circle, and it was a repeat. What happened before, except maybe a little bit more ignoring. And I watched him as he sadly backed out again and went walking looking for some adults to talk to. And my heart was saddened. Is that what is happening? Is our media culture just making us devoid of how to even go about real relationships and how to welcome somebody we don't know? And how to make them feel at home. Real life relationships mean taking an interest in others and asking questions to see how they do. Discover what makes them tick. Don't all have the same talent in that. Some of us, that is a much more scary proposition than others of us. But when we have a relationship with Christ and we appreciate what Christ did for us and how he invited us in, and we're going to want to do what we can for others as well, to have real life relationships. I was at a place of business. I heard a Mennonite man, he was a married man with a family, say something to the effect, "I have nobody at church I really feel close to." Well, he said, "One. I have one person that I could really bear my heart to." But then he said, "I feel closer to the youth than I do to any of my peers at church." And again, I say, why? That's sad. We should have lots of people at church that we would feel comfortable saying, "Oh, this is what I'm struggling with. Do you have any advice for me?" We should be able to have real life relationships and talk the real things that are going on in our heart, in our mind. We're serving the same God. We're heading to the same goal. We're trying to do life in similar fashion. We're facing the same enemy. And we need real life relationships to help us make it. If we are struggling to have real life relationships with our own peers, could it be that there's a difference in values that's standing in the way? We don't have that common goal. Our life choices, our direction of travel could be factoring into how close we can really get to each other because we're not quite on the same page, or maybe too far off the same page. If I want to drive a $100,000 Tesla truck and live in a church culture that values simplicity and economy, I'm probably going to have a difficult time with real meaningful relationships because I'm bringing something into my life that takes away that common denominator of the people I'm associating with. Personal values can play a huge part in closeness. On the flip side, if I believe my brother is not buying into my simplistic values and I'm spiritually one up on him because look at the way I'm living life compared to him, we might have some trouble with our real life relationships because of our attitude and the way we're going about life. Number three, third part of relationships is trust. This is why conversation with a stranger, even another Mennonite that we don't know, can be a bit difficult. If you have no common interest on a horizontal plane that you're aware of, like hunting or tractors or Tupperware or babies, and you have to meet this person, you may struggle to find that first step in the relationship because it takes trust. You don't just spill everything about yourself to a total stranger. You build for a deeper relationship. You build in small ways. We seldom go deep before we have built trust. Interestingly, I believe trust is built best by mutual things and then gradually build a bridge to carry our heavy loads. In fact, I will tend to distrust a person who comes on too strong and spills some very deep things, and I'm like, "You don't even know me. How did you say all that? Why did you say all that?" But trust is a huge part in building a relationship. Our family has always enjoyed camping over the years, one of the things that we did as a family. And it intrigued me about how camping culture, it seems like city culture and country culture can come together and merge on this same little geographical plot and each have their own little area where they're set up. And you can leave the mountain pie makers out, you can leave the cast iron fryer sitting there, you can leave the lawn chairs there. Nobody takes them. And some of these are people that probably have security cameras at home, they probably have bells at the end of the driveway, light, whatever you call them. You know, these are people lock their doors, but somehow they have trust when they step into that campground. They kind of flip a switch. We were with some of our family, and one of the grandchildren was cranking ice cream, and a neighbor camper came by on a golf cart and stopped and talked about it. It took him back in time just to see that family, yeah, activity going on. And one of my grandchildren happened to know which campsite they were at, and they wanted to take some ice cream to them. Sure, go take some ice cream to them. Well, after a while, they came riding back on a golf cart. They offered them a golf cart ride back. And suddenly there was relationship because there was an element of trust there right out of the gate, so to speak. Now, trust is earned. Trust has no free passes. Our media culture has taught us how to backstab and be mean and destroy friendships and walk away like we did nothing wrong when we were nasty and bullied, maybe. But we say it's no big deal. We'll still have 30 people left. It's not a big deal. If they want to be offended, they can be offended. That's a media culture world. Real relationships, it's different than that. We meet up in person, maybe a day or two or a week later, and life needs to go on together. Trust needs to be built. I'm going to be very passionate, maybe, on this point here. But as we think about living in the two worlds, as we think about this media world that we negotiate, along with real life relationships that we negotiate, and what it takes to make that all work, it takes a lot of trust in each other, how we're going to handle the real life things. I like to be a goofy grandpa when I'm with my grandchildren sometimes. And I don't care if there's some pictures being taken, but I have the confidence that if they go to posting, they'll be very careful what they post. I have that confidence in my family. And because of that, our real life relationships can be very relaxed and we can be ourselves. But all it would take for trust to be broken is for my family to betray that confidence that is there. And I would suddenly have a struggle to be myself. And they might say, well, what's going on? What's wrong? Some people struggle with real relationships because they never learn how to screen what they post and what they tell their friends. And their friends are running scared to be around them because of the poor choices they're making in communication in the media world. What if our friend makes a mistake or uses poor judgment in some area? Is friendship built by embarrassing them? Is real life relationships built by embarrassing them through gossiping on our social media? Even sending pictures to make sure everybody gets it, how foolish this situation was, how ignorant this and how thoughtless they were? I mean, look at it. Trust is something only we can build. The golden rule applies to all forms of connectivity in our relationships. Jesus talked about our tongue being a fire. James 3, verse 5. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body and is set on fire, the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. What comes out of our mouth can't be recalled. It can't be recalled. It is said. Social media is no longer a sin toward one person when we gossip, but it is a sin to many. We can, with one forward, with one push of a button, we can gossip and sin to many, many people and wreak havoc to our real relationships. And it can't be recalled. They're out there. The pictures go on indefinitely. We are responsible, and we will have to answer to God. The Bible says, for what we say. And I believe, brothers and sisters, we're going to have to answer to God for what buttons we push and what pictures we send and what we say on social media about the people we want to have real life relationships with. Number four. Another big part of real relationships is spontaneity, being spontaneous. Media relationships are superficial and not good for real life conversations in the aspect that they don't teach us how to be real in real time, how to be spontaneous in our responses. And that is a very important part of real relationships. And what do I mean by all this? I mean, they shield our first reactions and they shield our body language. And those are two huge things in real life relationships. And if we are constantly doing all our communicating on our media, and we don't have to learn how to really navigate our true emotions at the very first answer, we're going to be handicapped. We're going to be handicapped people. One of the things I really like about social media is it makes it so easy in a way to do a reply. You know, if what they said did make us angry or fearful or whatever reason we had some emotion, you know, we can just give ourselves a little time to calm down and we can send this nice polished reply. We can put a smiley face on and our friend thinks it's all good. And Howard wasn't offended by what I said. He even thought it was funny. But we went through a whole range of emotions. If we would have been in person, he would have said, oh, I don't believe Howard liked that. And media can train us in ways that we don't hardly know how to do in-person conversation. When we have to answer on the spot, and when they can see our expressions, and we don't have time to do a somersault and pound the sofa and whatever before we send a reply with a smiley face. We have to be real, because it's real time. And we can build a superficial image on social media that is not real life friendships. We can do so much cover up. We can pick and choose. We can even delete it if it didn't go quite right the first time we replied. We delete it quick before they read that. We try and say it again. You don't have that privilege in real life relationships. You have to be genuine and you have to talk it out if your true emotions really do show. I found it very interesting that the American people were getting frustrated with Kamala Harris because she refused to interact with the media. You know why they were getting frustrated? Because they know that she can have speech writers writing everything for her and wait till the perfect time to unveil all that. But when she has to relate real time with social media and she has to answer and they can see her hesitation and they realize that's an important part of what they need to see. I'm really fearful that we are going to maybe need more marriage counselors as time goes on. And media methods are teaching us how to resolve our differences with delay, how we can hide behind our emotions with social media. Because real life relationships do not give us the window of time to be phony. Real life relationships demand us to be real. And when it didn't come out right the first try and our companion suddenly realizes how we feel about each other, we got to sit down and talk this out. We couldn't hide behind electronics. That's real life relationships. We have to forgive raw emotions. We have to be thankful that we saw the raw emotions. Now we know what we're working with and figure out a path forward. That's how real relationships work. Number five, the fifth ingredient in real relationships is repetition. Let us go again. Let us go again, Paul said. We don't know how much time elapsed, but we do know that relationships are not deepened by indefinite separation. The longer it goes between relationships, probably the more shallow they're going to be. Just because we tried to talk to a stranger one time, or we tried to go deep with a brother, and it didn't seem to work out very well, it doesn't mean it might not go better the next try. We need to pursue relationships. We had a visiting brother I spoke with after church at Elm Street. He asked me, he said, how much visiting gets done among the families at Elm Street, in each other's homes? I had to admit that I think it's a lot less, maybe, than what it used to be. He said that he does not believe any church family will survive long term if all they're depending on is the conversations when they see each other at church. He said, you got to get into each other's homes if you're going to have long-term relationships and deep-level relationships. And I remember the years when I would call people and they were expecting calls to come to visit, and now it seems like it has, if anything, you invite somebody to your house, you don't ask to go to their house. And I'm not here to say what all is right or wrong way to go about it, but I am here to encourage that we need to have a congregation where we go again. we're concerned about each other, and we want to develop deeper relationships than just seeing each other and saying hi after church. And we do want them to come over for a camp. We do want to go for a walk on the trails. We do want to go biking. We want to do things that can build bridges for times that we might really need each other because of some things that we are working through. Make time for relationships. Pursue relationships. Don't expect others to make the first moves. Don't be offended if it didn't suit first try. Hopefully that doesn't mean they didn't want to talk to you, but you might have to try again. Politeness will always invite a retry if it doesn't work out. Real relationships are honest. Real relationships will say it doesn't work really good for us tonight. Could we try again sometime? I'd really love to have a visit with you and your family. Many relationships grow because somebody didn't give up in finding time. They worked to find a mutually acceptable time. We have so many ways to connect. We have coffee shops, we have park benches, we have restaurants, we have many ways that we can somewhere find a little bit of time to just sit down and enjoy each other's company. We don't read Paul and Barnabas were getting a lot of invitations. Maybe they were, I don't know. But they were ready to say, let us go again, even if it's going to cost us. At the end, it's likely not our media friends that will be our greatest support at Sunset of Life. The economy tractor clubs will fade out. The group chats will have names drop off the rest of our life. Mutual interests will change. At the end of the day, it's not our media connections that will matter most. But what matters most is the person, very likely, that's sitting to our right or to our left or in this building, our brothers and sisters in Christ, the ones we had long chats with, that hopefully we helped them make it to glory and they in turn helped us make it to glory. That's what's going to matter. Real relationships are not only for here and now. They're about the things that are happening here and now, but they're really about the future. I like to close with an abbreviated end-of-life testimony from Emma Bach, written back in the 1970s. She said this at the end of life: if I could live my life over again, I would have talked less and listened more. I would have invited friends to the table, even if there was a stain on the carpet and the couch needed cleaned. I would have eaten popcorn in the good room and not worried about the dust if somebody wanted to light the fireplace. I would have taken time to listen to my grandfather telling stories from his youth. I would have laughed and cried less watching TV and spent more time watching life. I would not get so worked up over petty things, but instead cherish the friends I have and the people who love me. We are sitting beside the most important people in our life. Don't let media distractions cripple meaningful time when we have the opportunity. May God bless us.